Makeshift Stories presents Somewhere, Sometime, an irregular series of short bedtime tales and modern fables.
A few weeks ago, we got interested in the idea of a two-dimensional universe. What would it be like to only perceive width and length, we wondered. A quick bit of research revealed that a schoolmaster named Edwin Abbott Abbott in 1884 had asked some similar questions, then wrote the novella Flatland, A Romance in Many Dimensions. This month's story revisits Abbott's flat universe from the point of view of a down-and-out private eye in search of his first big case. So now, sit back and open your imagination as we listen to Makeshift Stories 44, A Crime in 3D. Somewhere in some time, there may have been a mysterious theft that could only be solved by speculative physics.
Okay, I'll admit it. The private investigation business has never been that good. Or should I say, I've never been that good at it. I'm not that down-on-their-luck, hard-nosed PI that could solve any case. Far from it. Although the down-on-the-luck part is true enough. In reality, my cases were few and far between, forcing me to work evenings at a pizzeria to subsidize my career of choice. Even then, most of my time was spent sitting in my office or, as I tried to justify to my unpaid accountant, researching online. That's how I found out about the obscure article on speculative multidimensional physics, which led me to the ill-fated solution of my one and only big case, and also forced me into an early retirement to write my recollections of it. My brief foray into writing now unfortunately resides in the sale bin, classified as pulp fiction. And to this day, no one believes me. My story began almost 3 years ago. Back then, as usual, I hadn't had a client for months, when suddenly and dramatically my fortunes appeared to change. On that fateful day, I was optimistic about the future, excited that my career was finally taking off. In hindsight, I should have been apprehensive, for what I was forced to conclude was so radical that even now I find it hard to accept. My naive understanding of the universe was changed forever. I can no longer simply slide along a busy avenue, watching the edges of window shoppers glide by, oblivious to the unseen reality that I now know can intercede in our world at will. But I'm getting ahead of myself. It all started, as I have already mentioned, nearly 3 years ago as I was sitting in my office, which, by the way, is situated in one of the less respectable sectors of Planar. I had arrived at the office at 9 a.m. after following my normal morning routine. I always stopped by the Triangle Cafe for breakfast. I like sitting out at one of the sidewalk tables, watching the lines of people sliding by on their way to work. I used to think of this as an exercise to hone my admittedly meager powers of observation, by deducing the occupation and employer of citizens passing in the lines by the colors on their edges. Occasionally, I even discreetly followed one or two to confirm my deductions. But I digress again. So, there I was, sitting behind my desk, waiting. I had seen dry spots before, but back then, business had been one prolonged drought. Clients were rarer than a seven-sided hexagon, and about as likely to show up at my door as a proof for the existence of other dimensions, which I had just finished reading about. Regardless, I hadn't had a paying client in weeks, or at least one that didn't involve a lost pet. I was just closing my newsfeed and about to start cross-indexing my files for the adjective odd when the door chimed. It had been so long since I had heard anyone use it that I didn't immediately understand what it was. Then recognition kicked in, and I slid over to the door to look through the people that I had installed after unwittingly letting in a very unsavory character involved in a pet napping case. It was only a few missing points in the line of the door, so small that only the most astute observer would ever notice it. I pushed my eye up against a tiny gap and saw the edge colors of an officer of the Royal Guard, impatiently prodding at the chime. Odd, I thought. I had paid my annual tribute, at least for the last year. So, why would a Royal Guardsman sully his uniform to come here? With a mixture of apprehension and curiosity, I slid the line of the door open and gestured for my esteemed guest to enter. He was a portly gentleman with a rather long perimeter that barely managed to squeeze into my modestly sized office. His mass authoritatively dominated the space, forcing me to edge around him. I positioned myself so my right side was hidden behind my desk, allowing me to access the computer without him seeing it.
"He looks angular,"
he stated, more than questioned. "That's my name. What about it?" I obstinately replied, fingering the dots of my keyboard for a lawyer's name I didn't owe money to.
"Well, it's good to meet you at last. Let me introduce myself. I am Sigma Octagonical, Chief Inspector of Her Majesty's Royal Guard."
The Chief Inspector enthusiastically pushed his facing arm toward me in a friendly greeting.
"I've been following your career, and have been most impressed."
My career wasn't worth following, so my guard went up, as Sigma continued.
"Your reputation for taking on cases, no matter how hopeless they are, is what has led me to seek you out."
Which meant I was his last hope. But didn't he realize that it was the negative balance in my bank account that was behind my reckless lack of discretion in accepting new cases? Did he know he had me cornered, that I couldn't refuse to turn him down no matter what the case was?
"He looks,"
he continued in a low, commanding tone,
"if you don't mind me being so familiar, your queen, and indeed the entire country of Planor, needs your expert assistance."
I immediately felt like I was being set up to take a dive. Not a single point changed on the line of my face as I replied. "I am most flattered, Chief Inspector. How can I help?" The portly man sighed in relief, then glided closer to me, so his face filled my entire line of vision.
"Can anyone hear us in here?"
he whispered. "No," I confirmed, thinking why would anyone bother bugging my office. The Chief Inspector continued in a hushed tone.
"Mr. Angular, you can't tell anyone this. No one outside of the inner circle of the Queen knows. The Royal Treasury is nearly empty. Planor is almost bankrupt."
I let out an inadvertent groan. Just my luck, I thought. I finally get a high-profile client, and they're broke.
"Don't worry. You will get paid regardless. Now, let me explain our little problem. About 2 months ago, gold from the Royal Treasury started mysteriously disappearing. We quickly ruled out corruption in the Ministry of Finance."
He didn't explain how, and I didn't really want to know. The Queen's reputation for ruthlessness was no doubt well-deserved, which meant that I didn't want to fail and explain why no one else would take the case.
"Initially, we surrounded the building with a 24-hour guard, so tightly packed together that not even a single point could get through their line unnoticed. But when that failed to stop the thefts, we surrounded the guard with another circle of guards, then placed surveillance cameras around them all. But the gold still continues to disappear, and the Queen's patience is running out. It's as if the thieves can magically materialize inside the vaults, then vanish into thin air with our gold. Mr. Angular, you will be handsomely rewarded if you solve this mystery."
Without hesitation, I answered, "Captain, I will take the case, but you must let me into your vaults to stake out the crime scene." He frowned.
"No one is allowed in, not even I."
I considered this for a moment. "So no one has actually witnessed a theft, and you've been unable to stop them. And now you're here asking for help. Blocking all access to the building failed, so it should be obvious that someone needs to be inside." He began to protest, but I cut him off. "Look, This isn't negotiable. I can't solve your case without witnessing a theft. After all, with your many lines of guards and cameras, how could I manage to smuggle anything out if that's what you're worried about? With a resigned huff, the chief inspector replied,
Only Her Majesty can grant you access like that, and I doubt she will.
Then he impatiently turned and heaved his substantial girth out of my office. The door angrily slid closed behind him, and I cursed myself for losing the case. For the next several weeks, I checked the news feeds every day. Not unexpectedly, there was no mention of the mysterious thefts from the royal vaults. Then, 3 weeks to the day after my first meeting with the chief inspector, and, as I would find out, several thefts later, a courier arrived with a royal proclamation granting me access to the inner vaults of Her Majesty's Royal Treasury. 2 days later, I found myself hiding behind several rows of banknotes, intently monitoring the 4 vidcams I had set up. Each covered a 90-degree angle of an immense circle of gold securely positioned in the center of the vault. I looked at all 4 screens in a line before me. Left and right, front and back. But for hours, nothing stirred. I was about to give up on my first night's stakeout when I noticed 2 dots appear. One on the forward and one on the rear camera. They began to grow in sync from a point to a wide circumference. For an instant, it looked as if 2 thieves had somehow managed to evade the royal guard and had entered through the far wall. But there were no doors there. Then I noticed that the figures were growing at the same rate. It didn't make any sense. They were simply expanding from a point. The 2 mysterious intruders grew until they obscured the front and rear camera's view of the gold. I switched my attention to the left and right vidcams and noted how the gold was positioned between the 2 large mysterious presences. They stopped growing, hesitated, then simultaneously pushed up against the gold. An instant later, the gold had disappeared. Then they quickly shrunk back to a point and vanished. I was at a loss for an explanation, at least a rational one. I watched the vid replay several times before I dare call the chief inspector with the bad news. Despite my insistence on the accuracy of the recording, he could not be convinced that the intruders had appeared out of thin air, conjured away the gold, then simply shrunk out of existence. Although I was more than ready to admit defeat, the chief inspector had insisted that I try again.
By decree of the Queen, you shall share the same fate as her gold if it disappears again,
he proclaimed before sliding the line of the vault door closed in a dramatic flare of impatience and disgust, then barred it shut. In that dark, lonely room, while I waited for my fate, for surely it would come, and there was nothing I could do to prevent it, I reviewed the vids in my mind. The 4 cameras proved that the intruders had not broken in and approached the vault from the left, right, front, or back. It appeared as if they had materialized from nothing, growing like weeds, then diminishing back to a point and disappearing. Appeared. I rotated the word around in my mind for a while. Sometimes. How something appears was determined, I remembered, by your point of view. For example, a long, thin citizen could look quite large if you only saw the person in question approaching from their widest dimension. This thought triggered a vague memory. I had heard of such a phenomena before. But where? During the lonely dark hours I was strapped to the gold, I sifted through my memory trying to recall, until suddenly it clicked in. Of course, the article I had read a couple weeks ago, written by one Theta Tridecagon, on theoretical multidimensional physics, the one that had been outright rejected by most of Planar's scientists. The article speculated that there was a 3rd dimension that was neither length or width. Conceptually, you could think of this other dimension as being built up from an infinite number of universes of width and length, sandwiched up against each other. Tridecagon argued that our senses could not detect such a thing, and one would interpret any object moving through it as only existing in our limited frame of reference. We would only see its width and length in the plane of our two-dimensional universe. Planular scientists had vehemently argued that there was no observational evidence to support the math. That was, I realized, until possibly now. Tridecagon explained that an object passing through our universe would appear to have materialized from nowhere, and if it was not a regular shape, might appear to shrink or grow depending on which part of its circumference was intersecting our reality. Very much like the vids recorded of the mysterious thieves. Not more than a few more minutes had passed when I felt like my insides were being violently pushed in a direction I could not fathom. I desperately looked to the left and the right, but the vault walls had disappeared. "Thief!" I vainly yelled. "Put back our gold and let me go." I heard a deep voice which appeared to come from everywhere at once reply.
"What have we here? A flake that speaks. It claims it owns the gold coin. Interesting. Look up, little flake, and make your accusation to my face."
I desperately swiveled in both directions, but could not find the source of the voice. "I cannot see you," I yelled. "What is this up that you speak of?" The voice simply laughed, saying more to itself than me.
"The flake cannot look up or down. How interesting. It only perceives along its edge. Poor thing. It can only see in two dimensions."
Before I could say another word, I felt my insides lurch again, then found myself back in the empty vault. When I reviewed the vids with an extremely angry chief inspector, they showed me momentarily disappearing along with the gold, then reappearing moments later by myself. He was not convinced, nor was he amused by the fantastic story of my brief encounter in another dimension with a thief I could not see and the mysterious command to look up before I was flung like an unwanted crumb back into our universe. I tried in vain to remind the chief inspector that the video evidence supported the esteemed Professor Tridecagon's theories and that this was the only way to explain how the thieves could apparently materialize in any vault of the land at will. Instead of thanking me for solving the crime, I was laughed at, then imprisoned for possible involvement. After several more break-ins occurred while I was incarcerated, the chief inspector decided I was a harmless, deluded fool and eventually released me, but not before he had taken away my investigator's license. The theft stopped as mysteriously as they had started. Eventually I contacted Professor Tridecagon, and together we wrote the book that explained how the criminal activity was definitely evidence for the existence of a third dimension. Despite the elegant mathematical proofs, the underlying scientific theory, my experience, and the video evidence, no one believed us. Although in researching the book, I found one forgotten author, one A. Square, who had written about a similar experience over 150 years before. So it helps to know that at least the professor and myself are not alone. Now, having heard my story, you must decide for yourself if dimensions beyond the two that we perceive exist. Perhaps you have even experienced one. And if so, I'd be glad to hear from you. Thanks for listening to Makeshift Stories 44, Somewhere, Sometime, A Crime in 3D. We hope you enjoyed this month's story. And if you did, please tell your friends about us. We'd love to hear from you, so send us an email to makeshiftstories@gmail.com. Or visit our website at makeshiftstories.com. All sound effects are licensed from soundsnap.com,
And the opening theme, Glimpse of Happiness, is PodSafe Music, licensed from PremiumBeat.com. Makeshift Stories is released under a Creative Commons Attribution, No Derivative License, which means you are free to share our stories. Just remember to credit us and don't alter anything.